Ahoy, mateys! Welcome to the GameBuoy.org video game podcast, your twice-monthly port of call for gaming news and views that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. I'm your host, Captain Spike, and with me, as always, is First Mate Slagkick.
Yarr!
Today is March 30th, 2014, and this is episode 49, GameBuoy's second annual anniversary celebration spectacular! And also a look at our favorite thirds. Welcome again, our lovely and beautiful listeners, to another episode of the GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
You know, as I just mentioned, we're sort of celebrating our second anniversary of doing the show. We've now been at it for a couple years, and we're getting ready to go into year three.
Whoop whoop!
And we thought it would be fun to start off year three looking at our favorite third installments of some of our most beloved franchises. But before we get on to that discussion, we have a pretty full slate of our usual follow-ups and news bits, so in the interest of your time and our own, let's get this party started. So you may recall we were somewhat concerned after Amazon acquired Double Helix, most specifically about the continued development of Killer Instinct and the Season 2 content for that game. We finally got confirmation that Iron Galaxy is the studio that's going to be taking over continued support on Killer Instinct. You might be familiar with Iron Galaxy for their work on various Capcom fighters doing HD versions for the downloadable services Xbox Live Arcade and PlayStation Network, as well as the massive success of their sort of like indie game Divekick.
Yeah, so, you know, it seems like they'll be in good hands.
Yeah, this is really, to me, this is almost, like, better than any other alternative we could have had. You know, I as far as I'm concerned, Iron Galaxy is in a better place than Double Helix was to have made Killer Instinct in the first place. We're talking about a team that has a lot of experience with fighting games. They have taken other people's properties and freshened them up. They've come up on their own with new and compelling fighting game mechanics. This really, to me, all around is a very, very good sign about the continued health of Killer Instinct. I am no longer worried about the future of Killer Instinct at all.
Excellent. I'm very happy to hear that. So we've got news that the Hatsune Miku Project Diva F2 game is coming west later this year. And this has improved gameplay, 40 new songs, and a physical release for both PS3 and Vita. You know, the Project Diva F did really well. They kind of took a gamble on it, but it paid off because Miku-chan is really popular, so.
Yeah, so something to me that's really fascinating about this is that Sega really must have sort of anticipated that a lot of people were going to be importing this game if no release came before its Japanese release. Because they made this announcement of this game coming west literally like 2 days before it came out in Japan. So, you know, and now we have confirmation we're going to be getting this game and we're going to be getting it this year. So we're not going to have some multi-year wait for this localization. This is really, to me, great news. And I really hope that people who are interested in this content support this game and encourage Sega to you know, keep bringing these things over. Because I'm a big fan and I'm really happy to see that they're doing well.
Yeah. In Rocksmith 2014 news, if you're a fan of Matchbox 20, you can
push you around where I will.
No, but keep going. With the news, I mean.
There's a Matchbox 20 pack, including Push, As Long As the Song's Unwell, 3 AM, How Far We've Come, and She's So Mean. She's So Mean must have been written about Captain Spike.
Yeah, I don't even know that song. Like, these
me
other
either.
Ones I know, but She's So Mean. Like, what is that?
It's probably a new one that they're trying to push or whatever. No pun intended with push. It's a 5-track pack for $12, or each one can be individually purchased at $3.
We now know the lineup of the Game Boy Advance games that Nintendo is going to be releasing for the Wii U Virtual Console. And this goes for both North America and Europe. On April 3rd, we're getting Mario and Luigi Superstar Saga, Metroid Fusion, and Advance Wars. On April 10th, we're getting WarioWare Inc. and Kirby and the Amazing Mirror. On April 17th, we're getting Golden Sun and F-Zero Maximum Velocity. And finally, on April 24th, we're getting Yoshi's Island Super Mario Advance 3.
That's great. You know, Japan's only having two releases on April 3rd and 30th, but they have a couple like Kirby Nightmare and Dream Land, Zelda the Minish Cap, Wario Land 4, so hopefully we will also see those
and
eventually.
And Mario Tennis.
Oh, yeah.
On this side of WTF news, we have here a press release from Sony indicating that there is going to be Little Big Planet DLC for Beyond Two Souls. You'll be able to play as a Sackboy version of Ellen Page's character or Willem Dafoe's character.
Interesting.
As well as a couple of others, but, you know, I guess Cole Freeman and Ryan Clayton as well. I don't remember who these characters are. I played this game months ago.
No. Atlas has said to expect a shortage of Persona Q for its Japanese launch. This is based on the fact that the past couple of Atlas games, such as Shin Megami Tensei 4 and Etrian Odyssey Untold, have been out of stock after the first week, or even on release day, and they said they want to apologize in advance for, you know, anything that happens in terms of sellouts. This is kind of a humble brag.
Yeah, it really is. And, you know, it's hard to blame them. I saw some criticism on the internet that if they're anticipating sellouts, maybe they should ship larger quantities of games. And, I mean, I want to get behind that train of thought, but at the same time, the realities of the video game retail market right now are really nasty. So basically, for people who can't get this game at retail, maybe they're going to have to look at the eShop download, because, again,
yeah,
you know, Atlas is not a huge company, and even having been bought by Sega, Sega has their own financial problems. They can't just print copies of games willy-nilly.
Yeah. Halo Spartan Assault, which is the twin-stick shooter from the Halo franchise, is coming to Steam on April 4th, so pretty soon after you hear this.
This week, owners of Sonic Lost World for Wii U got a real treat as Sega released downloadable content to allow Sonic to explore The Legend of Zelda.
Cool.
Yeah, it's something, all right. You know, this follows up from the December DLC that this game saw that allowed Sonic to explore Yoshi's New Island.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
So, you know, I haven't played this Zelda DLC yet, because I'm not really that big of a Zelda fan.
We know.
But apparently it's pretty cute.
Yeah. Nosgoth, which, you know, is the Legacy of Kain competitive game, is available in alpha on Steam Early Access.
Exciting. Let's see. So, in order to get into this Early Access, you'll have to buy, like, one of the microtransaction packs, the smallest of which is priced at $20.
What?
The larger packs range from $35 to $150, which will grant players in-game bonuses such as war chests, additional weapons, and character boosts, whatever that means.
So I would make a joke about Initial D Perfect Shift Online being a collectible card game, free-to-play iOS game, but we already made that joke.
And it's a 3DS game.
I'm sorry, 3DS game. That's right. So this is going to be out on April 2nd, and if you log on between April 2nd and April 16th, you'll get a gasoline recovery ticket and a pride recovery ticket.
And that's in Japan only.
Yes, we have no confirmation or anything that it's going to be coming outside of Japan.
Cartoon Network and the games studio Little Orbit has announced that they will be launching a new Adventure Time game for consoles and handheld devices in the fourth quarter of 2014.
That's great.
We also have confirmation that FTL, Faster Than Light, is coming to iPad on April 3rd. This will also include the Advanced Edition expansion that is headed for PC, which is a free release on that same day. Those of you out there on Internet Radio Land may recall that I personally was ranting and raving about FTL. This was one of my favorite games of the last few years.
Yeah, you liked it.
So I absolutely cannot wait either for this iPad version and for the Advanced Edition expansion on April 3rd.
We've got a report from Nikkei that Final Fantasy Agito, which is a smartphone game with the characters from Type-Zero, you know, that used to be called Agito before it was renamed Type-Zero, is coming out in April. It'll be a free-to-play game with items and weapons available as microtransactions. And we still don't have Type-Zero over here.
Oh, you. We have news here that Hyperdimension Neptunia Rebirth 1. This was the Vita remake of the first Hyper Dimension Neptunia game is going to be coming to North America and Europe in the late summer. Something that's particularly notable about this localization is that it's not being handled by Nippon Ichi America this time around, but instead is being brought over by Idea Factory International, which is, you know, obviously the international arm of Idea Factory.
Yeah. We've received word that Air Dash Online, which you might remember as being an indie fighter inspired by Super Smash Bros., has been put on hold.
Indefinite hold, in fact. The previous program lead, in fact, apparently now works for Sony at their Sony Bend studio. They are, of course, a studio that's behind such games as Uncharted Golden Abyss on the Vita, as well as about half of the Siphon Filter games.
Oh, wow.
So, no one really quite knows yet what's going on here. They haven't talked too much about it, except to say that Homeboy got a position with Sony, and from the sound of it, just doesn't have time to work in his free time on this cool-ass Smash Brothers-inspired game. I'm bummed, because I've been looking forward to this game for a long time, but at the same time, I guess you gotta do what you gotta do to keep food on the table.
Yeah.
And that about wraps it up for our follow-ups, so I think it's time for...
News. 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 Oh my god, news. Oh my god, news. Alright, for those of you out there who are Sword Art Online fans, I know we here at Game Buoy are, we got some exciting news courtesy of Bandai Namco Games Taiwan. They recently announced that the Vita title, Sword Art Online Hollow Fragment, is going to be including English subtitles. And it sounds like it's only going to be another month after the Japanese release. It'll be, released on May 29th. So that's pretty exciting. It's not an Oculus Rift game, but, you know, probably the next best thing.
Indeed. And, you know, the Japanese release is still slated for April 24th. This, of course, is the Vita game, which follows up on the previous PSP Sword Art Online game. This one apparently is going to have, like, a whole huge, like, character interaction system where you, like, almost have, like, dating sim elements,
ooh,
including same-sex bromances.
Ooh, hey, I need to import that and then dust off my Vita.
The gameplay apparently is some kind of, like, Monster Hunter meets larger overworld thing. And you can take, you know, your romantic interest or whatever out into the field as a party with you. And for those of you who are familiar with the anime enough to know names, there has been sort of teases about a Kirito Klein romance.
Whoa, I ship it.
Yeah, I ship it hard.
Some unfortunate news for fans of the Wild Arms PS2 games.
Yeah, I know, there's only like four of us.
Someone over on XSEED's Facebook page, a fan, asked if there was a chance that they would be released for PlayStation Network for PS3, and an XSEED representative said that because of issues with the coding somehow, it's incompatible with PS3 that, the way that they emulate other PS2 titles. So that's unfortunate.
Yeah, you know, this sort of thing, we all lament it, of course, but it's not entirely uncommon. You just sort of have to take a look at sort of the Microsoft's implementation of original Xbox support in the Xbox 360. And, you know, a lot of titles that make use of, like, specific hardware calls or something, for whatever reason, just would not be able to run on the emulator that they had for that. And you also saw a lot of little problems pop up in even some very popular games, again, just because of the way emulators work. So it's unfortunate to see that we're not going to be getting Wild Arms 4 or 5 as PS2 classics.
That's a bummer.
That, you know, it is what it is.
Hey, there's always that Gaikai streaming service. You never know. Justin Bailey, the COO of Double Fine, has announced that Double Fine is dipping its feet into indie publishing. They will be helping to promote and distribute Magical Time Means Escape Goat 2, which is a puzzle platformer game.
It looks great, too. You know, there's a little trailer for Escape Goat 2 here. It looks really fun, so I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, and that's actually available already. You can get it on PC, Mac, and Linux, either through Steam, GOG, and the Humble Store for $10.
Woohoo! I love GOG, I love the Humble Store, and I obviously love Steam.
Oh, is it GOG?
This is exciting.
I said GOG. Oops. Portal's coming to the Shield.
I just bought a scapegoat. But yes, Portal, in fact, is coming to the Shield.
I thought you said you just bought a scapegoat. I'm like, what do you need a scapegoat for?
I bought
for?
The game Escapegoat.
Yeah, so Portal's coming to the Shield. That's cool.
Yeah, you know, this is really weird, but, you know, NVIDIA is porting it to the Android platform, so it will be sold in the Google Play Store for use on other Android devices.
I'd rather have an Oculus Rift version of Portal.
You know, Steam actually plays really well with Oculus Rift.
Does it without any extra, like, stuff needed?
Well, I mean, in some cases you have to, you know, do, like, some small tweaks and things to get the Rift working, certain, like, drivers or INIs or what have you. But it's overall pretty painless, I feel.
Well, that's good news.
You just have to be careful with Portal because of the way that some of the movement works. Like, it can give people, like, motion sickness
stuff.
Oh,
that sucks.
I have not been affected. I think it's really fun. In any event, we have news that Mind Zero will be releasing in North America on May 27th.
Yeah, courtesy of Axis.
Indeed. This is, of course, a PS Vita game. It will be available in North America in stores and as a digital download on May 27th. Europe is only getting it as a digital release on May 28th.
Man, you know, it's funny that all these, like, JRPGs and niche titles are coming to the Vita, like, and, like, they kind of have been for a while, and, you know, we just haven't, I mean, we've been talking about it, but we haven't really, you know, stopped to look at the fact that the Vita's got, like, a kind of a cool little growing library of very niche titles.
After years of waiting, the time has come. Marvelous AQL has confirmed that we will finally be getting a North American release of Half-Minute Hero 2, The Second Coming. This is going to be releasing for PC via Steam, and Marvelous AQL has confirmed that this release is slated for, quote-unquote, very soon.
Yeah, that's really, really happy news. In very polarizing news, Facebook has purchased Oculus VR.
You know, I really, really, really wish on one hand that this was our April Fool's joke because it would be so fucking epic. Like, who expected this to happen?
Yeah, they acquired Oculus VR for $2 billion. Oculus will still be in Irvine, California, and according to Zuckerberg, he says he's going to let them do their thing, that he just wants, he really believes in this technology, that he, like, you know, wants to help them develop partnerships in order to, you know, be able to be more successful. But I can't help but see a Facebook, Oculus, VR, you're living in your Facebook.
I absolutely disagree 100%. I mean, maybe someday down the line we'll see Facebook become some kind of agglomeration of what we have now and, like, something out of Snow Crash. But presently, Zuckerberg and the Oculus guys have all been very clear that Oculus is a device for games right now, that, you know, games developers are the only people capable of creating these sort of 3D immersive worlds that VR actually works in the first place. So, like, just having, like, your Facebook feed, like, in front of you on a wall, like, that would not be a compelling use for virtual reality. No one would buy it. That's not what they need to do to grow the platform. Well, Facebook has very openly acknowledged that to grow VR, it's gonna have to be games for the next several years.
Yeah,
pretty much exactly as we were already slated to be getting from the Rift before Facebook became involved.
Yeah,
all that has really happened in any substantive way is that Oculus Rift now has the entire power of Facebook behind them to achieve their goals in the marketplace rather than being a startup out of someone's garage practically that is begging, you know, angel investors and venture capitalists to give them money and having to go to Kickstarter so they can make their devices. Now they're going to be able to really grow virtual reality the way that they want to. And then, you know, some number of years down the line, we will see some kind of social functions. We will see interactive events and ball games and concerts where, you know, they have multi-angle cameras set up so that you can experience the event like you're there. But for the present day, to me, it is immensely encouraging that Zuckerberg et al. Are openly acknowledging that this 3D technology right now only exists in the hands of games developers. So it would be ludicrous for them to turn the Oculus Rift as it exists presently away from games. That's not the plan.
Yeah, I guess cyberpunk fears aside, we just have to look at this as a positive for games. Although, Notch of Minecraft fame says that Facebook creeps me out and is ending Minecraft support for Oculus Rift.
Yeah, I have a lot of feelings about this, but I mean, I guess the first way I could sum it up in a way is, I mean, I appreciate what you're saying, Notch. I think you're dumb because, your reasoning is largely about like, oh, Facebook's not a game tech company, but like, fool, one of your most successful products is the Minecraft Xbox Live Arcade version, and Microsoft's not primarily a games tech company. Like, I have to say, this just reeks of, like, that whole attitude of, like, oh, because this is Facebook, it must be bad. And I just don't see that. I don't think a corporation or a company is inherently good or bad. And in this case, I think that the assets and resources that Facebook has will do way more good for Oculus Rift than Oculus Rift would be just sort of floating out there, a little fish in a huge pond waiting to get eaten up by some company to exploit them. Of all of the possible options, I think Facebook is in the best position to give them what they need while, again, not encroaching on them. Because, again, we're talking about a display. Like, it's a display device. It's not like, oh, I'm going to plug this in and automatically be advertised to. Like, that would be like saying don't buy a Sony TV because it's just going to have ads for PlayStation games.
Yeah, but what if there's a Sword Art Online-style controversy without spoiling it for people who haven't seen the anime? Except you're involved in Facebook. I don't want to spoil, but anyway,
moving on.
Swords and Soldiers is coming to the Wii U in April. It is a remaster of the tower defense game from WiiWare in 2009. The developer, Ronimo Games, who you probably most know from Awesome Knots, partnered with Two Tribes, who you probably know from Tokitori. They helped upgrade and optimize it for Wii U.
That's exciting. I can't wait. I'm going to buy that day one, for sure. We also have news that DJ Max Technica Q is now out on iOS for the US market. So if you have an iOS device and you're into rhythm games, I would highly recommend you check out DJ Max Technica Q now. It's a free download, but songs are sold as in-app purchases as song packs to expand your experience.
Yeah, very cool. Hand of Fate, which is the deck-building roguelike, is going to be coming to PS4 and Vita. This is from indie studio Defiant Development and was funded from Kickstarter. There's also going to be a Windows, Mac, and Linux release for computers. But that's really exciting that PS4 and Vita are getting it. I will probably pick it up on PS4.
Designer toy manufacturer 3-0 has acquired the rights to produce figures based on Titanfall.
Cool!
However, before you get too excited, let's just keep in mind that the smallest robot that they're going to be building, it is a toy of the Atlas, which is going to be 20 inches tall and come with an articulated pilot figure, will probably cost somewhere in the area of, you know, more than $300. Based on other figures that they've done that are about the same size. So, if you're looking for Titanfall memorabilia and merchandise, which I certainly am, I guess start saving your money.
Yeah, Captain Spike, I know you're excited about this news, and I'm not just trolling you because you told me you were.
Yeah, I am.
There's a pink Nintendo 2DS coming exclusively to GameStop. It comes with a Disney Magical World carrying case. It's a pink and white 2DS. It's going to be available starting April 11th and available for $129.99, available while supplies last. It also coincides with the release of Disney Magical World, which is the Disney Life Sim for the 3DS and 2DS.
And last, and kind of least, California State Senator Leland Yee, who is, you know, noted for being very anti-video games and has many, many times tried to push legislation regulating and penalizing video games and games developers, has been arrested on bribery and corruption charges in San Francisco. This is, of course, noteworthy. You may recall that Mr. Yee was extremely against video games and for regulating video games, especially those with guns and violence and what have you. Mr. Yee, one of the allegations against him is like a conspiracy to like trafficking firearms. So that's a pretty big damn deal.
Yeah. You know, he was starting to turn into a regular old Jack Thompson, but,
Yeah, indeed. And, you know, funny enough, he was disbarred by the state of Florida in 2008, Jack Thompson was, so.
Which isn't quite as much of an arrest for arms trafficking.
Well, yeah, but again, it, you know, it's funny because it's a very similar trajectory. It really, to me, almost seems like a kind of, like, throwing the blame so people don't look at, like, what you're doing. Like, Leland Yee. I don't know why I have such a hard time with that name. But it very much feels like, I don't like guns, I don't like guns, I don't like guns. Wow, meanwhile, he's like, bring all your guns here, let's make some money off your guns from other countries.
Well, you know, something Republicans saying that homosexuality and gay marriage should not be allowed, caught in airport bathrooms.
Oh, so it's like a projection, like, oh, I'm definitely not into this. I'm secretly into this.
I'm not into dudes and video games at all.
Girl, ain't no one ever gonna
believe
that.
Or food.
Anyway, it's time for some sadness.
That's always rough on my throat to do that.
Bitch, that was me.
So we've had more departures from Sony. Justin Richmond, who was a director at Naughty Dog.
And was supposedly the director of Uncharted 4.
Yeah, he has moved over to Riot, home of League of Legends.
And, you know, in another departure that is mentioned here at the same time is that Seth Killian, formerly the community manager at Capcom, who really sort of grew out of that post and became a rather big deal, revealed that he left Sony Santa Monica, where he was working on PlayStation All-Stars Battle Royale, back in December.
Yeah, so
we're seeing a real loss of talent in a lot of these studios.
We are. Activision has closed their mobile studio in the UK called The Blast Furnace. Or rather, they, says at the end of the month, and this is the end of the month. So, we
indeed
hope they land on their feet. There were 47 employees. They were responsible for last year's iOS game Call of Duty Strike Team, and they also had mobile versions of Pitfall and Wipeout.
As ever and always, we here on the SS Game Buoy, send out our thoughts and hearts to you guys. We really hope that you land on your feet and that your long-term employment isn't affected too badly by this closure.
With that, I think we're ready to get this party started.
Indeed. All right. Well, we're having a light and fluffy conversation here, having a little bit of fun, doing a masturbatory victory lap, and just talking about sort of our favorite third installments in games franchises that are long running. We're going to give you the name of the game. We're going to talk a little bit about why we love it. And where applicable, we will explain why it is the third installment of any given series. Some of these titles do not have the number 3 in their name. Why don't you start us off, Slag?
So I want to start off with Sonic 3, Sonic the Hedgehog 3.
Woo!
You know, I've talked a lot about Sonic 3. I've talked about my Hedgehog Day memories. And, you know, I talked pretty in-depth about Sonic 3 on the Sonic episode we did last fall. But, you know, I really always have to bring up Sonic 3 any time that a Sonic discussion comes up. Because, really, I think the thing that I loved about it is that, you know, it wasn't just a focus on speed, which I think is a misstep that some of the later games tended to take, is just, you know, think that Sonic was all about speed, when it wasn't all about speed. You know, it had just really good platforming, exploring, and, you know, I think, like, you know, the whole package, the level design, the music, you know, we have that whole history of the Michael Jackson involvement. It came out really well, and, you know, I could technically say that Sonic 3 and Knuckles is the third installment, but, you know, just as a game itself, Sonic 3, despite being shorter than Sonic 2 when you don't have Sonic and Knuckles involved, I still think is a better game. And, I mean, really, when you think about it, Sonic 1 didn't have a ton of stages.
No, it really didn't.
So, I mean, you can say what you want about Sonic 3 being, incomplete, split up for profit reasons and such, but, I mean, before Sonic and Knuckles came out, I still thought it was a very rewarding experience. Definitely was the height of the franchise at that point, and, you know, I still love it to this day.
Excellent. I'm going to go, and I don't necessarily have a lot to say about this game, because I've already talked about this game a lot on this show, but I'm going to get the obvious choice out of the way real quick, and I'm going to knock out Demon's Crest. Of course, this counts as a third installment of the Gargoyles Quest series. This was a Capcom SNES game made back in the first half of the 90s. It is, you know, sort of has some Metroidvania-y elements, some of the most beautiful art and music I've ever seen on the Super Nintendo. Very spoopy atmosphere. And, you know, I still pray basically every day for this to come out to Virtual Console so that all of my friends and listeners can experience this amazing, amazing title.
Yeah, you replay this at least once a year.
I replay this about every 4 or 5 months.
So maybe like every third month. Because it's third franchise.
Pretty much.
But yeah, Demon's Crest, you know, really, really well put together game.
How about you? What is your second favorite third?
Well, I'm going to bring the soccer mom in here to announce my second favorite third.
Smack Kick's second favorite third is Super Mario 3.
I can't with you in this Mario.
Yeah, I know you hate when I do Mario, so that's why it's funny to do. Sorry.
Rude.
But, you know, like, I have a lot of love for pretty much every Mario game that isn't, like, Hotel Mario. But, and you know, I'm not necessarily saying that I prefer it over every other Mario game ever, but I do have a lot of love for Mario 3. I mean, I have also very fond memories of it. You know, back to when we talked about The Wizard, which was pretty much a horrible movie aside from Jenny Lewis being like, "Don't touch my boobs!" And then the preview of Mario 3, which I remember really fondly because I was like, that's Mario 3. We don't have it yet. Oh, my God. And then...
Don't they, like, get the warp whistle in that
do,
game from
like,
the fortress?
They do, yeah. So
I mean, was how I found out how to get that warp whistle.
Right?
The other ones were not as hard to find, but that one was like, bitch!
Yeah, you know, and, you know, it's not... I know it's not everyone's favorite Mario, but it really did lay the groundwork for a lot of stuff we still see today. The overworld map, you know, came from... I mean, I'm not saying that Mario 3 invented the overworld map, but, you know...
It implemented it in Mario for the first
exactly.
time.
Exactly. And, you know, just a lot of memorable worlds, like World 4, which was the giant world, was definitely a favorite. I liked World 5 a lot, where you start out on land, and then you have to go up into the tower, and you go up into the sky world. I always really liked that one and Giant World for some reason.
I really liked the world that was mostly underwater, where you had to get lots of frog suits and often evade Big Bertha.
I know that a lot of people actually, like, skipped past that one because it was very complicated for a lot of people.
Well, that's kind of my bag, so I'm
not really
surprised to hear that.
I'm a big fan of Big Bertha, though. You know, and, like, the desert land where you have to... There's the one stage where you have to avoid the angry sun. I mean, it's just there's, like, so many things that are, like, so memorable about that game. There's the, you know, little mini-games, like the... little matching game. There's the and spade game. There's the coin ghost ship. Just all these little Easter eggs that pop up that, you know, we take for granted, but that some people might not even realize actually are in the game.
And, you know, it's funny because I often let hyperbole get the best of me. And because I prefer Super Mario World, I often end up saying things like, God, I hate Mario 3 so much. But I do have to admit, all things being equal, I agree. It's actually quite a tremendous game.
I mean, you have to think the scope of Mario 3 was huge compared to, like, Mario 1 and 2, you know, so...
Oh, absolutely.
So, definitely one of the gems of the gaming world. I mean, I think most people would probably agree, but one of my favorite thirds.
Now, you know, this is going to be kind of a strange pick, I think, but... I'm going to go with my second favorite third being Mortal Kombat 3.
Really?
And, you know, I know that the conventional wisdom is that the series peaked with Mortal Kombat 2, but that has never gelled for me. I think Mortal Kombat 2 was great. I played it a lot as a kid, but I distinctly remember in the arcade that I played in, they ended up having to, after they sold their Mortal Kombat 2 machine and got Mortal Kombat 3... They ended up having to sell a different machine to get a Mortal Kombat 2 machine to play side-by-side with Mortal Kombat 3, because Mortal Kombat 3 lost so many players from Mortal Kombat 2. But the reason, my hypothesis for this has always been that, for me, Mortal Kombat 3 was the first game in the series that had a serious fighting engine. It had structure for combos, it had rules for these combos with, like, diminishing returns on damage values... It had, you know, I felt like really tight controls. In a lot of ways, I felt like it was the next, like, step in complexity from the very easy to get into, easy to play, easy to button mesh, Mortal Kombat 1 and 2. Mortal Kombat 3 was the first one that I felt was a technical game. Something that I really felt, in Mortal Kombat 9, or I guess they call it whatever that unnumbered, like, reboot was, Mortal Kombat 8 maybe, whatever, I felt was a return to form to sort of that very technical style, very combo-oriented, very auto-doubles and linkers, and almost like the fighting engine that Rare and Midway had come up with for that first Killer Instinct arcade game. So, yeah, Mortal Kombat 3 for me, my favorite game out of the Mortal Kombat series, the first one where I really felt like it became a full-fledged fighting game that could hold its own next to its contemporary Street Fighter. Because if you'll recall, the Street Fighter kids and the Mortal Kombat kids typically did not play well together.
Well, that's like the Oasis and Blur kids of fighting games.
Yeah, no, it's exactly that. So, those are the reasons why, for me, Mortal Kombat 3 is one of my favorite thirds.
So basically, Street Fighter was the Oasis of the fighting games, but then Mortal Kombat 3 was like the Blur album with Psalm 2.
Woohoo! But, I don't really know what you mean by that, so I can't really extrapolate. Why don't you give me your next third?
My next third is Saints Row the Third. You might remember that I talked about this on one of our What's Up segments, and just how it basically was better than any GTA game ever, both in terms of, you know, the fact that it actually controlled well, which I have never thought, I mean, this is, I know, very controversial. I have never thought that the gameplay engine of the GTA games has been very good.
Yeah.
Like, even down to, like, the aiming mechanics and stuff for, like, the guns and such. But not only that, but just and also in tone. I know the first two Saints Row games were kind of silly, but, I mean, Saints Row the Third is really where they took it over the top, and just made it really silly, really tongue-in-cheek, and, you know, that's what I want out of a game involving, you know, like, theft and violence. Like, I was never really here for the, like, oh, serious street style, you know, like, I always felt like GTA was trying to be, like, you know, like, one of those, like, street gang movies from that were, you know, really prominent in the 90s, and, you know, I never really found the appeal of them, sorry to say. I know a lot of people love GTA, but for me, you know, I'm a Saints Row fan now, thanks to Saints Row the Third.
And, you know, I didn't want to cut you off, but now that you've paused, I do want to add, I don't think that your opinions are actually as uncommon or as unpopular as you might think, especially in the last...
No way, dude, Rockstar Games is the best.
Especially in the last year or so, I'm seeing a lot of people sort of jumping ship and going over to Team Saints Row, specifically talking about sort of the more robust game engine and play style, as well as just the setting and general sense of humor. So I think that's a great pick, Saints Row the Third, because for me, that's where that series really started to take on an identity. And, you know, we've seen in subsequent DLC releases for that game, and now Saints Row the Third, or I'm sorry, the four, Saints Row 4, we're really seeing them really drive that home in that direction, sort of this idea and gameplay style.
Yeah.
You have anything more to say about Saints Row the Third?
No, just that I think that it was really the turning point for the Saints Row franchise, and, you know, Saints Row 4 did really well, and I think that people are going to look back and really pinpoint Saints Row the Third as the, you know, as the big jump in, you know, pushing that forward.
Excellent, excellent. All right, well, I'm going to jump in here. I was going to cheat and cite Final Fantasy III as one of my favorite thirds, meaning Final Fantasy VI, of course, because I think actual Final Fantasy III is a little bit of a shit show.
Yeah.
But I have instead decided to go with Castlevania III.
Oh, okay, good choice.
And I have talked here on the show about Castlevania III being easily my favorite of the classic Vanias. So I just want a real quick bullet points for why I'm citing this as a favorite third. I felt like it really grew the series in a new direction. I think it was the sort of start of, like, some really cool innovations in that space in terms of, like, branching pathways.
Yeah, that was really interesting.
Multiple playable characters that had different styles of attack.
Well, Alucard, yo.
Well, exactly, yeah. Alucard, Grant Danasty. Yeah, Danasty. And, you know, Silpha Belnades. So, I'm a huge fan of this game. I think that it sounds and looks gorgeous. And it's probably the only of the classic Vanias that I still regularly replay. Although, I was switched on back in December or November when Super Castlevania IV finally hit the Virtual Console for Wii U. I did get switched on to Super Castlevania IV finally. But I would still say that Castlevania III is my favorite of the classic Vanias, and it's an incredible game. If you haven't played it, and you're listening to this show, more likely than not, you should play it.
Yeah, you know, I kind of feel like Castlevania 3, you know, Castlevania 2 was just a totally, like, different game than Castlevania 1. Castlevania 1 was kind of just, you know, very bare bones. I really feel like Castlevania 3, like you said, it really, like, fleshed it out.
Excellent. Yeah, no, that's pretty much exactly how I feel. Slaggy McWaggy, if you'd like to take your next one.
Yes, I'd like to talk about Rock Band 3.
Oh my gosh, of course.
Which we talk about, like, all the time. You know, unfortunately, to date, it is the last installment of the Rock Band franchise. Well, I mean, I guess if you don't count the, what was that, Rock Band Blitz, but, you know, the last, like, mainline installment of Rock Band. And, you know, they really just did everything right here that, you know, and I think, you know, we talked about on a rhythm gaming episode that it wasn't really that Rock Band 3 did anything wrong. It's that Guitar Hero did everything wrong and, you know, turned people off from this style of rhythm gaming. But, you know, it had the pro modes for guitar and drums, and really, you know, with the aim of teaching you how to play music, it added keys. And, you know, just with the library being able to import from every Rock Band game, I mean, it's really the only Rock Band game you really need.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, did you mention that it introduced a new instrument to the franchise?
Yes, the keys.
Excellent. For some reason, I didn't hear that. And, you know, all I really have to say about this is that we still talk about this game basically every week, because we still play this game basically every week, even though it released in 2010.
Yeah, so, you know, it was really sad when they stopped releasing DLC, but, you know, they continued to support it, so...
For years, yeah. And, you know, again, this is a game that came out, you know, more than 3 years ago now, and we still play it every week.
Yeah, pre-Game Buoy.
Yeah, absolutely. So, we are huge fans, both of us, of this, and if Slag hadn't gotten to Rock Band 3, I probably would have.
But what do you want to get to?
I'm going to go with Street Fighter 2 Champion Edition.
But that has the number 2 in it.
Ah, indeed. But, you know, Street Fighter came out, and then Street Fighter 2 came out, and then Street Fighter 2 Champion Edition came out. And Champion Edition, for me, was sort of the sweet spot of where Street Fighter and fighting games in general really clicked for me. You know, as a small boy, I loved the character designs of Street Fighter and Street Fighter 2, but I was awful at these games. When Street Fighter 1 came out and the arcade I went to had an arcade cabinet of the first Street Fighter game, which a lot of people think was called Fighting Street, but it actually wasn't. That was just the TurboGrafx-16 port of it, or, you know, Turbo Duo, whatever, blah, 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 PC Engine. But, you know, this game came out, and I would be on, like, a chair standing up because I couldn't reach the controls on the cabinet, and I would just, like, trying super hard just as, like, Ryu or Ken, because I don't really think you could play other characters without some kind of trickery or something. And I couldn't get fireballs out even.
Wait, you had to stand on a chair to play Street Fighter 2 Championship Edition?
No, Street Fighter 1.
I was gonna say, I was like, weren't you like 12?
LOL, no, do catch up. But, you know, the arcade got Street Fighter 2 when it came out, and I put so much money into that game, but I was no good at it, and I don't know why that is. I would try to play Guile and Blanca primarily, and I just couldn't make either of them work. I did figure out some really great cheap tactics playing as Chun-Li and bouncing off fools' heads, but it wasn't until Street Fighter II Champion Edition came out, which, you know, allowed both players in versus mode to play the same character, and it added the four boss characters as playable characters, Vega, Sagat, Balrog, and M. Bison, that playing it really clicked for me. I started playing as Vega, and I could consistently win as Vega for the first time in fighting games, and that really taught me how to play fighting games. You know, I eventually shifted over to learning different characters and getting fairly good at them, but I look back at the balancing of Street Fighter II Champion Edition and the innovations at the time, you know, same characters with different color palettes and what have you, and I really look at that as, like, again, a big moment in fighting games and for Street Fighter as a franchise. It really sort of cemented a lot of the game mechanics and balances and features that we look at as standard in all fighting games now.
Yeah, and you know, there was an article last year on US Gamer talking about, like, the top 10 biggest grossing arcade games of all time, and Street Fighter II Champion Edition was one of those titles.
That's interesting, but I'm not surprised. Slaggy, I think you have one more.
I do. And this one might be a little controversial because of the controversy that surrounded it, but this takes us all the way back to Game Mooie Episode 1. I'm, of course, talking about Mass Effect 3. Now, I'd have to say that my personal favorite Mass Effect game is probably Mass Effect 2, just because I love the large cast, and, you know, I just, it really hit the right notes for me. But I do have to say that in terms of gameplay, Mass Effect 3 really was the most polished, that the multiplayer alone was just loads of fun, you know, totally separate from the main game. And, you know, we even talked about that despite the drama surrounding the original endings, I still thought it was, like, a really great game. And, you know, these are games that a lot of our friends, you know, and us included, replay over and over again because, you know, just the gameplay and the way that you're able to make your Shepard yourself really, you know, makes it rewarding. But especially, you know, in 3, you got to be Gay Shepard. So, you know, I think for a lot of us gays, you know, that really was a big deal. And, you know, really, you know, something that we hadn't seen before, you know, aside from the, oh, lesbian alien drama from the original Mass Effect.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, you know, I still think that 3 is a great game. You know, I know that there are a lot of issues that people have with it, but I still enjoy it, you know, and I still think that, you know, even when we have Mass Effect 4 come out eventually, that people are still going to look back and be like, yeah, you know, 3 had some really good things going on for it.
Excellent.
Including James Vega.
I love Vega. I like...
Speaking of Vega, you like Vegas a lot, don't you?
Right? I like Vega. I like James Vega more than I like Garrus.
I thought you were going to say you like James Vega more than you like Vega, a.k.a. Balrog.
No, that's also true, though. So I'm going to wrap up this discussion with my fifth pick, which between the two of us means we've compiled Game Buoy's top 10 favorite thirds, with Marvel vs. Capcom.
There's not a 3 in that game.
There's not, but it
no,
is
but I know what you're
the
talking
second
about.
Sequel to X-Men vs. Street Fighter,
yeah.
Which itself then was followed up by Marvel Super Heroes vs. Street Fighter. Which
right.
culminated in Marvel vs. Capcom. I don't know that I really need to explain here too much why I love Marvel vs. Capcom, but I'm going to real quick. I'm a huge comic book fan. You know, I'm a huge fighting game fan. I love fighting games. So, of course, I'm going to love Marvel vs. Capcom, especially considering that Capcom's roster of IP is probably my favorite of the industry, especially in the sort of time period that this game was made, in that sort of late 90s window. So to see all of these crossovers happening, having, you know, Spider-Man and Venom versus Strider Hiryu and Ryu, for me it was a really big deal. And, you know, in a lot of ways this franchise, the Versus franchise, popularized a specific kind of fighting game, you know. The huge combo counts, the gigantic screen-filling supers, a lot of the really complex and strange, like, mechanic-breaking juggle, like, full damage combos. And for me, Marvel vs. Capcom for a solid decade was one of the best, like, balanced over-the-top fighting games you could play. Marvel vs. Capcom 2 was notoriously unbalanced, of course. And you had other over-the-top fighting games start coming out, and Guilty Gears and what have you. But for me, a lot of those tropes and gameplay standards were established by the Versus series, and to me, they were never more fine than in the first Marvel vs. Capcom. Well, excepting, of course, maybe my present love of Marvel vs. Capcom 3.
Yeah, you know, I've had the chance, you know, Marvel vs. Capcom 2 was probably my first introduction, but I have since been able to play, you know, in various, like, multi-arcade, whatever you call those things, the X-Men versus Street Fighter, and it really feels like Marvel versus Capcom 1 really was the first one that really felt super polished, you know, in terms of that franchise, so...
Oh, absolutely.
So, I mean, I couldn't really see myself wanting to really go and say, oh, I want to play Xbox versus Street Fighter. I'm like, no, I'll just go for MVC.
Yeah, Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. I think that about
absolutely.
Wraps. I think that about wraps it up for our discussion. So let's dig into Rumor Has It.
Rumor Has It. Rumor Has It. Rumor Has It. Rumor Has It.
We have word here that the Australian Classification Board has rated Castlevania Aria of Sorrow and F-Zero GP Legend for release. This wouldn't normally be notable since both of these games already exist, except that there's indication in their ratings submissions that they're going to be published by Nintendo. So obviously the next indication would be that these are games that are going to be coming to the new virtual console support of the GBA platform on the Wii
U.
Yeah,
you know, that Australian Classification Board really gets a lot of Rumor Has It.
It sure does. We also have here a teaser for Call of Duty Ghosts for the Devastation DLC, which is due out on April 3rd, indicating that there may be a Predator from the Predator movies in this expansion, or, you know, DLC pack. Normally, this would seem extremely WTF, but it is worth mentioning that the Onslaught DLC back in January made Michael Myers from the Halloween films a playable character. So there is some, there is some reason to believe that we're about to see a Predator in Call of Duty.
What?
And last, but certainly not least, of us, is news from the Sony Eurasia executive, whose name doesn't...
Serkan Sulun.
Brilliant, thank you. That Last of Us is getting a complete edition release for PlayStation 4 later this year. When approached for comment, a representative from Sony Computer Entertainment Europe told Joystick that at the time they had not announced The Last of Us for PS4 and therefore have nothing to say on the subject.
It's pretty inevitable. You know, they can make this top 10 list again.
It's not just inevitable. I think from the wording of their denial that it's pretty obvious. That having been said, that's it for our rumors this week. Let's move on to our look at some pretty awesome video game articles. Smash or smash!
So, Captain Spike, you probably read this one on Gama Sutra because you were very passionate about this during our news discussion today. This is called Oculus and Facebook. Probably not so bad, so maybe you could stop freaking out about it.
And, you know, as you probably got from that headline, it's basically just an article detailing why people who are getting all chicken little on the matter of Facebook buying Oculus are not really being fair to the realities of the business circumstances surrounding this purchase.
Yeah, this is a, they try to just talk some sense into the extreme reactions.
Indeed, and you know, I was of the pro-Facebook opinion in this matter way before this article was even published. I was defending this choice on Twitter. Those of you who follow me over on @SpikePoint probably already saw me defend it. But I'm not linking this here only because I agree with it personally. I would link here a well-written article I didn't agree with. But I think this is a well-written article that really sums up and uses structure to sort of show you why, if you're freaking out about this deal, maybe you need to reconsider some key facts. And I really feel like, in terms of games journalism, we don't get enough well-written opinion pieces that sort of, you know, you don't often get, here's X, Y, and Z of why I think this. All too often in games journalism, we just get told, that game is overrated, this situation is bad, just these sort of flat statements with no real justification. So I really appreciated that this piece sort of lays it out with different bullet points, like, this is why I think this, this is why I think this, this is why I think this. So I thought this was a really well-written piece, and I wanted to share it with y'all.
Excellent.
And Slaggy McWaggy, I actually dug this one up just for you.
Yeah, this is a US Gamer article called JP Gamer, Vote With Your Wallet. It's a discussion, you know, kind of in light of the news that the follow-up to Project Diva F is coming, as we discussed. Just talking about that, if you pay them, they will not port, but, you know.
Well, it basically talks about how we're going to be getting Hatsune Miku Diva F 2nd You know, with a relatively quick turnaround time, as we discussed here in this episode just a little bit ago. And it basically details, you know, a lot of times these games that everyone says that they want, once they finally get brought over, they don't get market support and end up failing or losing money. In the case of Hatsune Miku, it sold out from retail super fast, as everyone noted. And even though the Vita version only got a digital release, my understanding is that it also did rather well at digital. And so, of course, you know, this is basically just an article breaking down logic. If you support a game that you've asked for and it is ultimately profitable for the publisher, then they're gonna be, there's more incentive for them to hurry up and continue localizing games in that series.
Indeed.
Sort of similar to what we were talking about with Bravely Default. You know, we wanted Bravely Default to be, you know, successful so that Square Enix would take a sign that there's a hunger and a thirst for that kind of game.
And successful it was.
And this article, I just thought, was perfect citation of that circumstance occurring in the actual real marketplace.
Yeah. So, that brings us to the winding down of our episode. We'd like to take you into our social links part of the show, where we share social media.
It's time for What's Up! That was funny, LOL.
I said, hey, what's going on?
Slaggy McWaggy, why don't you kick us off? What did you play this week?
So, you know, maybe the reason why I forgot about What's Up is that I personally had a really, really busy week, and the only real gaming experience I had once again was Rock Band 3. Oops. But I am planning to pick up a couple games after Payday, and we'll
hope my way till payday.
And so we'll hopefully have more to offer during... Oh, you know, I have something else I could tell.
Oh, yeah.
Because we did play Beatles Rock Band as well.
Oh, yeah, we sure did.
So we played a little Rock Band 3, but we also played Beatles Rock Band, and that was just great, you know. Just, it was, you know, really reminding me of what a labor of love that game was. And, you know, you kind of looked at the Guitar Hero games like Guitar Hero Green Day, Guitar Hero Aerosmith, Guitar Hero Metallica.
Actually, Green Day was a Rock Band game.
Oops. What was the other one they did then? They did Aerosmith, Metallica.
Van Halen.
Oh. But, you know, then, like you said, Green Day, Rock Band, and then, oh, hey, Beatles, blam, print, done.
Yeah, in that game, it's so incredible, and, you know...
just, like, with the visuals.
Oh, yeah, man.
And then the note charts are just some of the best note charts in the franchise.
I do. I honestly think that those are the best note charts Harmonix has ever done. Just such a complete package, so compelling. And, you know, we did I Am the Walrus, and watching the visuals they put together for I Am the Walrus, like, that's amazing. Like, this could not have been done better than this is done right here.
Yeah, and then we did, like, the Abbey Road medley from Side 2.
Which is incredible. Like, who would include that in a game? I mean, Harmonix, obvo, but, man, it's so cool.
Yeah.
Alright, well, you know, the reason why I remembered we were doing What's Up is because I have two games I'm both really excited to talk about.
Good.
The first is Final Fantasy X HD, which I'm playing on my commute on Vita.
Ha 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 ha.
I saw that part and cackled because it's become such a meme. But, you know, it's funny, I previously have not been the biggest fan of Final Fantasy X. I thought it was super overrated. I didn't really care for it. And, you know, some of the things that stuck in my craw years ago when it came out for PS2 still do. You know, I'm a very numbers-based person in these RPGs. I really like stats and stuff. And there are not a lot of stats in that game, and that kind of irks me. But I'm really enjoying the story. I'm really enjoying the visuals, which look great, even though the animations now stand out as super awk. And I'm really enjoying the battle system quite a bit. So I would say, you know, my opinion on Final Fantasy X is really turning, and I'm really growing to like it quite a bit. I can't wait to start X-2, which I'm certainly a fan of. I've always liked X-2, so I really can't wait. The second game I'm playing right now while I'm at home is Infamous Second Son, which is, of course, the third or fourth, depending on how you look at it, Infamous game that is the first on PlayStation 4, and has just a lot of really cool features. It's a really beautiful game, but something that I'm really, really enjoying about it is that it almost feels like I'm playing an X-Men game with the way the story is structured.
Nice.
So I'm really into it. If you have a PS4 and you don't have Second Son, I would definitely recommend checking it out. If you're not a fan of the series, maybe just rent it or something, but it's definitely, I would say, the first PS4 must play.
That's great. Yeah, that's one of the games I intend to pick up. And did you talk about how much of a stud he is?
Oh yeah, no, the main character, Delson, is fine. So, and he also has a schlubby looking brother, and there have been times in game where I've been like, you guys should just kiss. I don't even care.
What?
You know what? I don't even care. I don't have to explain myself to you. Now, since you're so hot to trot on getting to our social links, why don't you do that?
Yeah, social links is the part of Game Buoy where we talk about your social media interactions with us. You know, a lot of the times we'll have a question of the week for you. We wanted to take today's opportunity to let you know that you can always tweet at us or send us a mail at mailbuoy@gamebuoy.org.
Gamebuoy.org.
Mailbuoy@gamebuoy.org. To any backlog listeners out there who want to respond to something that we talked about and you're like, hey, I have feelings and thoughts about that, we are more than happy to read that on air.
Yeah, absolutely. Just because an episode is old doesn't mean it ain't still relevant. Feel free to talk to us about it.
So to start out, we have Twitter user Remy LeBeau said, #GameBuoyExtra, #PaperboyFan.
Oh my gosh. All right. Well, there is one out there. Credit to you, Slagkick. Also, I love your username, Remy LeBeau. Gambit is my fave.
Yeah, and if this is your, if your user picture is you, you kind of cute. Hey.
Girl, stop objectifying our listeners.
Oh, he's British.
Oh my god, okay, what's the next social link?
The Book Pirate, better known as Colin from the Nerd Podcast, says, Episode 48, Take 5 Shots, #GameBuoy, the podcast, the drinking game. I'm sorry, this was also kind of a follow-up to the drinking game idea. Take a drink whenever they quote a student song lyric that we talked about last time. And he said, that is counting the pre-recorded segment transitions, which I'm not sure if they should count towards the drinking game. What do you mean pre-recorded? We've seen live all the time for those rumor has it's and what's ups. We're just naturally always perfect like that.
Girl.
Keitaro E37 said, good job on the news section on the latest GameBuoy.org podcast. Slagkick a spite point.
Aw, thank you.
Jeremy from the Koopa Club podcast, fix your face over on Twitter, says, I fucking loved the first Paperboy game. You get to destroy people's yards and home with deadly newsprint. And hello, okay. Talk about the Grim Reaper, lawnmowers going crazy, like toddlers going into the street in their little tricycles.
Holy cats, I didn't know the masses liked this game so much.
What do you got against Paperboy, yo?
I think it's awful and poorly designed.
Well, okay then. Your Enzyme said, I bought the X-Bone. This sale this weekend was too good to pass up. Need Titanfall buddies. And then Twitter user Titanfall Dads replied to that, said, if you're a dad, you should game with us.
Hey-o.
So I don't know if Titanfall Dads actually listens to us or just was, you know, picking up on the trending tweets of Titanfall. But Titanfall Dads, if you're out there and you're Titanfall DILFs, please send pictures and play Titanfall with us.
Your Enzyme, if you want to add me on Xbox One, you can. My username is Origami Pirate. And I absolutely encourage you and all of our listeners, by all means, feel free to add me on PSN or Xbox One, Origami Pirate, on both.
I am, Destructured on Xbox Live. I am Cryptic Apocalypse on PSN. I should probably just include those on our post because they're weird spellings
you
and
spell
such.
Them funny, yeah. But yeah, absolutely, you know, check out GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
We'll include those in the show roll. And by all means, you know, you can just tweet at us with for our information, too, if you're interested in gaming with us. I'm at SpikePoint.
And I'm at Sidekick.
Brilliant.
And if you'd like to interact with us in other ways, as ever and always, we love your iTunes subscriptions, ratings, and reviews. We like your Facebook likes. We fucking love Twitter. We like to tumble with you on Tumblr, and we like when you plus one us on Google+. You can always email us at mailbuoy@gamebuoy.org.
Mailbuoy@gamebuoy.org.
That's mailbuoy at gamebuoy.org.
I'm not repeating that.
Every social link of ours, as well as a complete archive of the past 2 years of Game Buoy, are available over on GameBuoy.org.
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 All right, we're getting slap happy. Let's wrap this up.
Give us some shout-outs.
All right, well, as ever and always, first I'd like to shout out to Koopa Club. That is Koopa with a Q and Club with a K. You know, they sort of run a very similar ship to us. If you like what we do, you're going to like what they do. I also want to shout out to VG Realness, serving up a weekly dose of gaming chit-chat among friends, as well as Neshoba Talks With You About Games, which is sort of like NPR meets video games off-Broadway. I'd be remiss, of course, not to shout out to the Game Over Takeover, your one-stop shop to go to for geekery galore, as well as the non-video gaming podcast, the Starboard Power Coupling Podcast, a Star Trek podcast you hope doesn't fail. As ever and always, I also need to shout out to Orange Lounge Radio, where every gamer has a voice, and from whom I steal ever so many of my cues. And last but not least, if you haven't gotten enough of me bullying Slagkick on air for your ears this week, I encourage you to check out Reading is Fundamental, our weekly podcast, summarizing and discussing and theorizing about everything current in the RuPaul's Drag Race world.
Work. Take us to a game bar.
I want to take you to a game bar.
I'd like to shout out to Game Bar, the podcast that fills your brain space with hours of gay video game commentary. They're part of our Hunty Bunch and basically the gay video game Prairie Home Companion, starring Lindsay Lohan.
Oh.
Nerdgasm Network, happy 100th episode to all y'all over there. Nerdgasm Network is the wildest shock jock video game radio show that you'll ever come across. It's a bag of hot dicks. Girls Gone Wow is the podcast where you can get a female's perspective on the world's most popular MMO. Horde House, starring Rob Roberts and Grandpa, a.k.a. as you go by Captain Matt, IDK, from Starboard Coupling Podcast, as well as our buddy Extifer. They talk about the place for all things online gaming, but never too seriously. They're over on the Voice of Geeks Network, that's VogNetwork.com. Video Game Outsiders is the podcast about video gaming from the average player's perspective. The Nerd Podcast is Nerd with a G. The G stands for gay because it is pop culture rants from a gay nerd perspective. And last but certainly not least, are for Latin American listeners and Spanish-speaking listeners, you would be remiss to not check out La Palanca Podcast, which is a podcast por y para gay gamers latinoamericanos en español.
Brilliant.
Me gusta mucho. And not only does it help me like try and practice my Spanish, but they both pretty fine.
Excellent. All right, and also you have one more 40 pour, right?
Oh, yeah, Zelda Reorchestrated. Thank you for the music.
All right, guys, I want to say here at the end of our second year and the start of our third, for all of our loyal and lovely listeners out there, we deeply, deeply appreciate your support, and we appreciate you spending your time with us. We're really excited about what the next year has in store, including our 50th episode. Recording in the next week or two. We're going to be taking a look at Rareware. Where are they now and where were they? And if you'd like, we're going to do something very special. If you record an MP3 of yourself celebrating our 50th episode, we will include it on our on-air next week. Just send us an MP3 over at mailbuoy at gamebuoy.org.
Mailbuoy at gamebuoy.org.
And I'll worry about all the technical fuckery. So please try to keep it brief, between 15 and seconds and 1 minute. And if you are another podcast and you want to include a shout out to your show, by all means, please feel free to do so. We're really excited about starting our third year with our 50th episode and really doing the best we can to bring the best shows to you. With that, thank you for your time. Keep gaming, keep thinking, and see you, Space Cowgirl. Sandwiches, sandwiches, sandwiches.
You nasty bitch.
Ah!